there have been huge differences, particularly between Seoul and Washington, on how to move forward on dealing with the crisis.
Asian leaders looking for less rhetoric. It's Thursday, September 21st. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a mixed response to Aung San Suu Kyi's speech. China's constitution to receive an addition. Japan and India floating greater presence in the sea. Genes controlling birth, self-healing roads. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A statement by South Korean President Moon Jae-in Wednesday referred to President Donald Trump's denunciation of North Korean behavior as portraying a firm and specific stance on the key issues regarding keeping peace and safety. It said Mr. Trump's remarks clearly showed how seriously the United States government views North Korea's nuclear program. Japanese Chief Cabinet Secretary Yoshihide Suga said he believes it is necessary to have strong deterrence, and he highly appreciates the position that all options are on the table expressed by President Trump. Speaking for the first time as president to the UN General Assembly Tuesday, Mr. Trump denounced the regime of Kim Jong-un as depraved, showing contempt for both other nations and the well-being of its own people.
It is responsible for the starvation deaths of millions of North Koreans, and for the imprisonment, torture, killing, and oppression of countless more. Now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict. No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea.
But Asian Studies professor Jeff Kingston of Temple University in Tokyo tells VOA's Victor Beatty the man on the streets of the Japanese capital would think this was not a wise speech to make.
Threatening Kim may play well for Trump's base, but in terms of productively addressing the situation, it doesn't seem to mark any progress. Of course, the governments of South Korea and Japan want to portray solidarity. They view the alliance with the United States as great protection for them. And so there have been huge differences, particularly between Seoul and Washington, on how to move forward on dealing with the crisis. But I think that if you look at a lot of Japanese, given the nuclear experience in Japan, Trump's threatening annihilation of North Korea don't go down well with people on the street. I think it's clear that the governments want to show solidarity and that they are united. The alliance is close, but I don't think, particularly in South Korea, that they think that Trump's position is a productive way to deal with the situation.
One North Korea analyst in Washington said that with those words, President Trump handed the regime of Kim Jong-un the soundbite of the century. It will play on a continuous loop on North Korean state television.
Yes, in terms of the propaganda of Pyongyang, the existential threat from the United States has long been a staple. We are surrounded, we're threatened, and so this strengthens the hand of the regime at home.
China's foreign ministry on Wednesday said China supports a peaceful resolution to the North Korean matter. In an op-ed piece in the People's Daily, Curtis Stone writes, "The Korean Peninsula is on edge, made more so by words and actions that worsen tensions. Mr. Trump's political chest thumping is unhelpful. It will only push the DPRK to pursue even riskier policies because the survival of the regime is at stake."
Yes, Trump is throwing fuel on the fire. And to the extent that he threatens the regime is going to double up and continue with its weapons program because they realize that that is the only thing keeping them in the game.
Jeff Kingston said he believes Asian leaders want a cooling down of the rhetoric and pursuit of a policy of both engagement with and pressure on North Korea. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. U.S. Vice President condemns terrible savagery against Rohingya Muslims. Cambodian officials ramp up anti-U.S. threats. India and Japan expected to increase maritime activity aimed at China. Beijing says Chinese and Vietnamese Communist parties have shared destiny. Australia prepares for first group of refugees for resettlement in United States. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Tuesday's long-anticipated address to the people of Myanmar by State Councilor Aung San Suu Kyi about the violence in Western Rakhine State received a mixed response. In remarks to the 72nd UN General Assembly, Secretary General Antonio Guterres acknowledged her intention to implement the recommendations of an advisory committee chaired by former UN Chief Kofi Annan.
But let me emphasize again, the authorities in Myanmar must end the military operations, allow unhindered humanitarian access, and recognize the right of refugees to return in safety and dignity. And they must also address the grievances of the Rohingya, whose status has been left unresolved for far too long.
Britain suspended military training for security forces in Myanmar, also known as Burma, while U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson pressed the Nobel laureate to address rights abuses allegations and allow in humanitarian aid. French President Emmanuel Macron denounced what he called unacceptable ethnic cleansing following a crackdown in Rakhine that has forced more than 420,000 Muslim Rohingya to seek refuge in Bangladesh. Vikram Nehru, a non-resident senior fellow in Southeast Asia Studies at the Washington-based Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, tells VOA reaction has been one of disappointment in what Aung San Suu Kyi did not say.
It's true that in her speech she did talk about the importance of the rule of law and protection of human rights, but the reality is that she did not provide an explanation as to why 400,000 people have now fled Rakhine State and into Bangladesh. She did say at one point in her speech that people could go and visit the region, but the reality is that they can't visit the region. Those who have tried to visit the region have been prevented from doing so, and even NGOs who wanted to visit the region have been literally threatened because they've been threatened with colluding with the militants. The other small positive in her speech was that people would be welcome to return provided that they could go through the 1993 agreed verification process with Bangladesh. But the 1993 verification process has been in place for almost a quarter century, and really nothing has come of it because, first of all, it's very stringent, and many of these people are so poor they don't have documentation. And more importantly, it's not clear who will do the verification, and if it's going to be the military, then clearly it's a non-starter. So unless something like that is done under international supervision, I'm not sure it will have any credibility whatsoever. So this was, as expected, a speech that really didn't offer a solution. I think it was primarily aimed at a domestic audience, and her domestic audience must have been very happy with it because it said exactly what they believe all along, that this is not their problem, whereas in reality the international community believes it is indeed a result of very brutal military action that these 400,000 people have had to leave their homes.
Nehru says the question of whether Aung San Suu Kyi's image is tarnished is not clear.
Well, I think what this basically says about her is that, yes, she's a very much a realist. She's, She's working under enormous constraints within a democratic system which really has an oversight by the military. This is realpolitik. But I think as important, I do believe that she does represent and does believe in the same way that the majority of Burmese believe that the Rohingya do not belong in Myanmar. And that, unfortunately, is a reality.
Speaking with Radio Free Asia Wednesday, Aung San Suu Kyi said her goal remains national reconciliation. While not criticizing the military itself, she insisted she has been critical of its actions. She said she has stood firm with the military before and still does so now. Happening now in Asia, Chinese and French presidents disagree with U.S. President Donald Trump's strong words and threats toward North Korea, but all agree at the annual U.N. General Assembly meeting on a widespread call for peace on the Korean Peninsula. Stay up to date with VOA 60 online. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us today on VOA Asia. When China's Communist Party hosts a once-in-five-year Congress next month, one key thing political analysts will be watching for is a name, Xi Jinping. China's current leader is one of the most powerful the country has had in decades, and analysts argue that one way his stature could be raised even further is to have his name added to the party's constitution. If it is, Xi could join others in the party's pantheon, such as former leader Deng Xiaoping and strongman Mao Zedong. Since Mao Zedong ruled China, the key thoughts, ideas, and ideals of the country's Communist Party's leaders have been added to its body's constitution as it has single-handedly ruled one of the world's most populous nations. But not all have had their names tagged on to their ideals. David Kelly, director of research at China Policy, a Beijing-based consulting company, says the practice is something like Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal.
You think of Roosevelt, you think New Deal. Powerful people want to leave these monuments behind as their legacy. And to have that, it extends the lifetime of their political influence.
When he retired in 2002, Jiang Zemin's ideas of three represents was added to the party's constitution. Later in 2007, Xi Jinping's predecessor, Hu Jintao, had his scientific outlook on development added. But only Deng and Mao had their names branded onto their ideas in the Constitution. Late Monday, Chinese state media announced that during next month's meeting, the party will write key theory and strategic thoughts outlined in the meeting into its Constitution. That meeting opens October 18th. How, quote, Xi thought or his name might be amended into the document is not clear, but some see the broad outlines of what type of changes could be made already taking shape. China Policy's David Kelly says that given Xi's control of all government agencies, the media, and propaganda, he can use any label he likes.
He will, because he can, make himself the owner of Xi Jinping thought, and then he will mix some domestic ingredients, very likely under the heading of creating a moderately prosperous society, and foreign policy advances that include Belt and Road, but they could probably use the language of the China solution. He has really formulated China's voice as a major power.
Kelly adds that while China did not behave like a major power under Hu Jintao, it has under Xi Jinping. We thank VOA correspondent Bill Ide for this story. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the hip-hop film Respect has opened nationwide in the Philippines as it explores the music scene targeted in Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte's bloody war on drugs that has killed more than 3,800 people in the past 15 months. The film's release also coincides with the 45th anniversary of martial law. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, India and Japan, anxious to keep Asia's dominant power, Beijing, in check, may send patrols into the contested South China Sea or sell arms to rival states following a pair of high-level meetings this month. Both Asian countries could sell or donate more weapons to China's rival maritime claimants, such as Vietnam, so they can build a defense against Beijing. Japan may also use Coast Guard or naval ships to patrol the sea to show that it's open despite China's claim to some 90% of it. Lee Hong-hip, a research fellow with the ISEAS Yusof Ishak Institute in Singapore, says that Japan may test China with low-key patrols of the sea. In May, it sent Izumo helicopters carrying warship into the sea for port visits in Southeast Asia en route to joint exercises with the United States.
What they have done is to send the ship maybe to the Gulf of Aden, and on the way back, they do kind of patrol in the South China Sea and do port calls to Vietnam, etc. But they do not intentionally design a kind of fun-off program in the South China Sea, because it may provoke China. But in the future, I'm not sure, because Japan obviously has some interest in containing China's ambitions in the South China Sea as well.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe met counterpart Narendra Modi in India last week to discuss enhancing maritime security cooperation. On Monday, their foreign ministers met at the United Nations with U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson to talk about freedom of navigation and respect for international law. Analysts understood both discussions to be aimed at China, including its expansion in the contested sea since 2010. Neither India nor Japan claims the South China Sea, but the two have warily eyed China's ascent to being the largest economy and military power in Asia. India and Japan might patrol the sea together with Coast Guard ships, says Andrew Young, Secretary General of the Chinese Council of Advanced Policy Studies think tank in Taiwan. They would occasionally send naval vessels, he added.
Maybe they will increase the momentum of their joint activities in order to demonstrate that Japan and India are closely cooperating in terms of regulating the so-called rule-based behavior in the South China Sea region.
Since losing a World Arbitration Court verdict over its claim to the South China Sea last year, China has sought favor with Southeast Asian countries through economic aid and investment. Malaysia, Vietnam, and the Philippines are accepting China's overtures, along with the same from other major nations. Maria Ella Atienza, political science professor at the University of the Philippines, Diliman, says the Philippines welcomes Japanese aid because the public and the China-friendly government have long trusted Tokyo. Filipinos know less about India, she said, but Japan could bridge the gap.
At least people are not so aware of possible positive relations with India. But if it's an alliance, maybe if Japan can vouch for India, perhaps that can build confidence in terms of the partnership.
In August last year, Japan began giving the Philippines 10 Coast Guard boats through a soft loan agreement. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this report. This news alert from VOA Asia: China will launch its first Mars probe in 2020 and hopes to conduct research into the space environment, geomorphic features, and surface structures of Mars. Planners say the ambitious program is well underway. They say the probe will carry 13 types of payload, including 6 rovers to explore the red planet. You may land daily on VOA Asia Facebook and explore great stories. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, an international team of researchers has identified for the first time 6 genes that determine the length of pregnancy and whether or not a baby is born preterm. Preterm birth is a major cause of infant death and disability, and now, as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, scientists may have clues about preventing prematurity.
15 million babies around the world are born too soon every year. Their little lungs struggle to breathe, and too many of them die. For those who survive, complications from prematurity can affect them throughout their lives. Now, at last, scientists may have cracked a code to help understand the causes of this complex disorder. In the largest to date DNA analysis, an international team of researchers looked at the genetic makeup of 50,000 pregnant women. They studied six genes that seemed to determine how long a baby would stay in the mother's womb.
For the first time, we have the clues that are going to lead us to rational ways of understanding a woman's risk for preterm birth.
Dr. Muglia says scientists have known for a long time that preterm birth involves a combination of genetic and environmental factors. One of the newly identified genes is involved in how the body uses selenium, a mineral found in soil, seafood, and meat. Another finding is that the cells which line the uterus play a larger than expected role in the length of pregnancy. This study showed that the genes that seem to be responsible for the timing of birth were from the mother.
For the first time, we have an idea of what tissue in the mom is the one that's likely driving the risk for preterm birth.
The March of Dimes, a nonprofit group that helps support the research, hailed the study.
We think this is an important breakthrough in finding solutions to end premature birth, and which is the leading cause of death for children between the ages of 0 and 5 and the leading cause of disabilities for babies.
The study doesn't provide any immediate solution for stopping preterm birth, but the discoveries may unlock new ways to prevent this disorder. Also, the researchers only tested women of European descent. The U.S. researchers compared their findings to data from three different studies in Finland, Denmark, and Norway. The data pointed to the same six genes. The next step is to expand the study to include women from other races and ethnic origins. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
How are the roads where you live? Well, no matter where roads exist, they tend to degrade fairly quickly. In spite of many attempts to replace it with a more suitable material, asphalt concrete remains the best and cheapest material for paving roads. Vulnerable to elements and stress, it has a relatively short lifespan and has to often be repaired. VOA's George Pudich steers us toward Swiss engineers, who say they may have found a formula for asphalt with self-healing properties.
Asphalt concrete is a mixture of crushed stone and semi-solid material called asphalt or bitumen that serves as a binder. In the form of a thick paste, the heated mixture is laid on a compacted base and flattened with heavy rollers. It quickly cools and hardens, creating a smooth surface for car tires. But over time, sun, water, ice, and heavy vehicles cause cracks, which slowly grow into dreaded potholes. Swiss scientists say if we could quickly repair the cracks when they are only fractions of a millimeter wide, the asphalt could last up to twice as long.
And the idea is to focus on this binder and to heat it up so that it can flow slowly and close the cracks. So the idea is that we have nanoparticles that are fused with this binder.
Iron particles smaller than 100 nanomillimeters thick are mixed with the bitumen binder to create a material easy to reheat with a strong electromagnetic field.
You apply a little bit in few seconds the magnetic field, and it's sufficient to make the black binder liquid enough to flow inside the microcracks.
In his lab in Zurich, Geoffroy demonstrated how a cracked piece of self-healing asphalt forms a strong bond again when exposed to heat.
So the idea is to have a truck that would carry this magnetic field with a large coil to cover a maximum of surface. And just this process, you only need to close the road for a few hours, and you have time to go with your truck over the road. And in a few seconds, locally, the road will be heated at the temperature where the binder is flowing.
Scientists say the new asphalt mixture could even be used for filling cracks and potholes on existing roads, making periodic repairs quicker and cheaper. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
Fortunately, you have many roads to travel to find our program. You can get VOA Asia on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download it from our website at voanews.com. Of course, we're streamed daily on VOA Asia Facebook. We're also heard on the radio, like the voice of Chungrung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. We thank everyone there for listening today. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Aydin Utku, managing editor Diane Gao. Ali Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird are on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a great day.